Week 1, Overview. The curtain rises on Egypt. Almost everybody knows something about Egypt. Think of sand and camels, pyramids and mummies, with the Nile River flowing right through it. We all know a little bit about Egypt, but the more you learn about it, the more amazing it is. Civilization emerged in Egypt about 5,000 years ago, around 3000 BC, and it thrived for more than two millennia. It's easily one of the most enduring civilizations in history. Now, if all you're studying is history itself, Egypt can seem a little dry. Centuries roll past without a lot of changes. But if your whole family wants to integrate the study of everything with history at the heart, Egypt's hard to beat. It's the perfect place to start on geography, government, economics, literature, mythology, religion, and more. There's something for every age group. Little ones can color camels and cut out pyramids, while teens grapple with the Egyptian view of death. Let's start with geography. Egypt is a land of stark contrasts, where geography really matters. You can tell your kids it isn't hard to find, even on a globe. All they have to do is look for the big continents, Africa and Asia, and then find the place where the seas almost come together. You see, the Mediterranean Sea comes within just a few miles of the Red Sea at the Suez Canal. If your son can find that spot on a globe, and then look for the big river right next to it, he's found the Nile. Find the Nile, and you found Egypt. There's more to geography than just finding places on a map, though. Geography deals with how people interact with places. Your children can see that for themselves as they trace the green ribbon of the Nile through the African desert. That steady supply of water made human habitation possible, and the annual floods provided rich soil that didn't get exhausted by continuous farming. Nowadays, we have fertilizer and understand the need for crop rotation. The Egyptians didn't, but that didn't matter. They just waited for the river to rise. Where there's plenty of food, there'll soon be plenty of people, and plenty of people can cause plenty of trouble. If you look around the world at ancient cities, what you'll find are city walls, because one village was often the village next door's worst enemy. Egypt had something better than walls. It had a desert, and not just any desert, but the Sahara Desert. The Sahara is big, and it's still growing. Today it's bigger than the United States, and it stretches all the way across Africa, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Red Sea. That vast expanse of sand is broken by the ribbon of the Nile. Now, the Sahara wasn't as large 5,000 years ago, but it was big enough to keep out invaders from the east and from the west. With a stable food supply from the river and protection from most of their enemies, the early Egyptians developed flourishing communities along the river. Villages grew into cities, cities became kingdoms. When one kingdom finally became strong enough to rule the entire valley, the Egyptians enjoyed remarkable security. Did you know that the Nile flows up? It flows up the map from the south. A lot of children find that very perplexing. The Nile is the longest river in the world. It's more than 4,000 miles long. The Nile's a great topic for kids with good imaginations. The Egyptians built themselves boats out of bundles of papyrus reeds. Imagine yourself paddling downstream in one of those boats, past riverbanks crawling with crocodiles, as hippos snort in the shallows. Flocks of ducks and geese explode out of the marshes, and lions roar in the reeds by the river. There's hungry hyenas following the lions, hoping for scraps. And yet, all this life was hemmed in on either side by hundreds of miles of desert. The abundance of all this life near the river gave rise to one of the world's oldest civilizations. We'll spend these first 3 weeks learning about Egyptian life and literature, but this week, let's just concentrate on the relationship between the river and the human habitations. The river was so vital that Egypt has been called the gift of the Nile. Your children may not understand how important the river really was. It's easy to see that it provided drinking water, but the Nile provided something else that was just as important in the long run. Mud. Mud made Egypt great. Each year in the summer, heavy rain soaked into the high mountains of Ethiopia, far to the south. That saturated soil flooded into the Blue Nile, which carried the silt all the way downstream. Eventually, much of that Ethiopian soil wound up in the Great Nile Delta, which bulges out into the Mediterranean, but the flood left hundreds of miles of mud along the way. That mud was fantastic fertilizer, and it caused the crops and the population to grow. So, in one sense, the mighty civilization of Egypt started with mud. Here's a point worth noting. When the Israelites left Egypt, they wouldn't have been prepared for the challenge of farming a land that wasn't refertilized every rainy season. The crops in Canaan would have exhausted the soil after just a few years of farming. God had something better for his people than mud and floods, though. He gave them his perfect law. In Leviticus 25:4, God commanded his people to let the land rest every seventh year. This biblical crop rotation provided wisdom that the Israelites never would have learned along the fertile banks of the Nile. Egypt's rich food supply and stable government resulted in leisure time and increasing specialization. People are well-fed, have time enough to develop skills in different areas. So there were potters, jewelers, weavers, perfumers, miners, sailors, shoemakers, butchers, kings. We'll be learning more about the government of Egypt next week. For right now, let's just note how many special skills the royal family needed. The book of Genesis tells how Joseph met Pharaoh's chief baker and butler while he was in jail. There were countless other experts in the royal family's employment. They had architects, scribes, accountants, musicians, not to mention their own embalmers, whose job it was to prepare their royal bodies for an afterlife of eternal bliss. Egypt developed scientifically as well as economically. With so much of their lives depending on the annual flooding of the Nile, they paid attention to the passing of the year. They figured out that there are just over 365 days in a year, although they had their own different way of counting them. Their calendar had 12 30-day months, with 5 extra days tacked on at the end. Their enormous building projects required them to come up with ways of measuring distances, areas, volumes, heights, weights, and so on. Egyptian doctors understood a lot about the human body in general, and some experts devoted themselves to one medical specialty or another. And the Egyptian doctors kept records, something that was unheard of in any other culture at the time. One special class in Egypt, if you can call it that, were the slaves. We'll be looking at the life of a slave more carefully in week 5. The Bible gives us a front row seat on Egyptian slavery in Genesis and in Exodus. As your family learns about Egypt in these 3 weeks, keep remembering that we'll be seeing it all in our rearview mirror by week 5. God called Israel out of Egypt, and we'll be moving out of this fertile valley to a wilderness, where the only food is manna, and the water miraculously springs out of the rocks. Moses is a great character to keep in mind as you discuss Egypt. He's the perfect person to help you visualize day-to-day life in ancient Egypt, whether you're discussing slaves or royalty, because he was both. See if your kids can look at Egypt through Moses' eyes. What did he see when he looked out his window? Young children can fill in facts like what he ate or what he did for fun. Middle school kids can make the connections between the Bible stories and what they're learning about Egyptian culture. Teens and parents can ponder what Hebrews 11:26 says about Moses. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. The more we learn, the more we see how it all goes together. The rains in Ethiopia fertilized the fields in Egypt, where the Israelite slaves groaned in bondage for centuries until God called Moses away from the palace to eventually lead them to freedom. We'll follow threads like government and slavery and sacrifice and freedom from the start of human history to its end for a purpose. In the end, it all comes back to the glory of God. Jesus left the glories of heaven to be born in a stable here on earth. He paid a higher price than Moses did to deliver us from a bondage worse than anything the Egyptians had to offer.